Accession number 17985, reel 3.
Mr. Wilson, reel 3.
Well, the Bois de Beaumont was a desperate, desperate place. After a little while, we were moved from the perimeter I was on, and I was moved deeper back into the forest, into the trees. And we got it's still shelling in there, but we weren't quite as exposed as we were when we were there initially. I remember there, we sent patrols out, and I took one, and I had to take a patrol, but it was to listen. I meant to take a patrol way down out, and I just sort of listened to hear transport moving or tanks and things like that. And if I could snaffle a prisoner, snaffle one. Those are my instructions. So I got about seven. Well, the whole platoon said they'd come with me, but seven of them. I took seven. And off we went. And we went through a platoon. Jackson, Lieutenant Jackson, was the platoon commander. And I had to explain to him that I was going out and to explain to his men, for God's sake, don't shoot us when we come back, you see. So off we went, and we went on and on and on. Nothing. And about half a mile right down into what we would have considered enemy territory. And then we sort of had this listen, so we all sat round in a sort of semicircle in a corner, all round protection type. You can keep my eye open all around so that we weren't surprised or anything, you know. And whilst we were waiting there, we heard noises. And we thought somebody coming up the hedge, you see. And we were all there. I had a sten and waited, you know, all tense, waiting this noise coming up the hedge. We thought it was definitely a German patrol. And it came closer and closer. And it came around the corner. It was a cow. We were relieved, I think. Anyway, we did. We could hear transport moving. We made notes of it and times and all the rest of it. We never saw any signs of other German activity. No men, nothing like that at all. And the time came for us to go back. And we went back. Once we'd been out on the patrol, we could hear the shells going over and the stonk going down on the bois behind us. When we went back, Jackson, whom I'd briefed that we were going out, platoon commander, he'd been killed once we were out. You know, once when we in the 2 hours or so, he was dead. Jackson, never saw him again. Father was chief of police somewhere in Scotland, eh? Nice lad, very nice. David, we had a pioneer officer, George Bate, Captain Bate, George Bate, terrific prankster. When we were, George Bate used to come and visit you, and if you were standing around talking, he'd have a tape measure behind you and suddenly say, do you want oak or what have you, you see? And the other thing was to come up and say, beauty, have a little white cross, it's made, everything's on except the date. This was the idea of a joke. And he'd done that to Jackson on the morning. And it hit George, I think. He'd never done it again. He never did it again after that. It was just George's fun. George Bate. Anyway, we eventually...
You commanded a platoon?
I commanded a platoon.
What platoon was this one?
D Company, 18-2. Sometimes we were supposed to have 30-odd men, but sometimes I was down to 11, less sometimes. Then we'd get some reinforcements come in and what have you. But eventually we went on, and then we did this great... there were all sorts of... I can't remember them all, frankly. But I remember the great attack on the Fale Gap. I remember forming up for that and airbursts German airburst coming over just as we were forming up. And Monty's moonlight, searchlights, that was the axis of the attack. And I travelled then in the half-track. I think it was a German half-track too that had been captured. And we went along this into the valley. I never saw anything like it in my life. Dead Germans and tanks, equipment. God, it was absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible.
This was the aftermath of Germany.
Aftermath, oh yes, it was indeed. I'm trying to think which came first, whether we went to Duclair or whether we went to Falle first. I can't just remember. I certainly went to Duclair, which is on the Seine. And we got to Duclair after a bit of, not a great deal of battling, really. And when we got to the river, we had to send the patrol across, and I was sent. I went across in a canvas boat with the whole platoon. There were only about 13 of us in, I think. And we went on this road outside Duclair and took up positions to stop any attack coming in down this road. But the only people who came down the road then were Russians in German uniform and deserters. And we kept manging them back. The only other people came, a remarkable number of Free French with FFI on their arms, you know. Didn't seem doing anything much, but they went by. And then some of them came in carts, and they'd poor women with them with their hair cropped, and they said they were collaborators. I felt terribly sorry for some of them. Wouldn't be impressed. Some of the FFI, I believe, did marvellous jobs, but I think these were chaps who jumped on the bandwagon, frankly. This is my personal opinion. Some were marvellous people, I've no doubt. But that was Duclair, anyway, across the river. But I don't know whether Falle came after that or not. But the Falle was, I never saw much equipment ruined. Dead Germans in my life. And it was terrific. Terrific. And then the war went duly on, and we crept along, and one of the most interesting battles from my point of view, and in a little way quite unusual, was the attack on Le Havre. We were due to do this attack on Le Havre, and the 49 Div was doing one half of the town, and 5-1 Div the other, and the 7th Black Watch were ordered to capture some heights. I can't think of the name of them, but I remember seeing on the map Place Place d'Immigrants, and we were all briefed up, and off we went in kangaroos. You know what kangaroos are. Tanks with no turrets in, they carry troops. And we went, and then we hit so much rubble, we couldn't get through, so we then proceeded on foot. A Company and B Company were in front of us, D Company was third down the lane. And we were attacking down, we were walking down this lane, but suddenly a German tank opened up from somewhere behind us, I think. Shells started falling. Little Greenwood, he was a tank officer really, but he'd been seconded to the Black Watch because they were terribly short of infantry officers. Shell landed in B Company and he was killed. And I was further down the lane, and David Russell was talking to me, and he was second in command of the 7th Battalion there. And I said Greenwood had been killed higher up. And David had heard on the radio, I think. And he walked away. I was standing beside a telegraph post here. And David walked away, and suddenly an 88 shell fell. God, blew his leg off, David Russell's leg off. It deafened me, absolutely deafened me. The thing that saved me, I was standing beside this telegraph post. And it killed one of my best chaps, White, Johnny 19. I remember he'd been with me on the patrol in the Bois. A great source of fun. And it killed White. However, the battle had to go on, and eventually we moved on. We'd studied the maps and all the rest of it. When we got to this barrack place, one thing they hadn't shown, the whole perimeter was surrounded by chain-link fencing. And we were all pretty silent. And the platoon in front of me was a chap, commanded by a chap named Paddy Shanks. Old Shanks, Lieutenant Shanks. Paddy. He'd been awarded the MM and a commission in the field for bravery. And Paddy and I came to this. He came back to me. He was ahead of me. And he came back and said, what are we going to do about this? We're being very quiet because the huts were there, German huts. And we crawled around this perimeter fence, Paddy Shanks, and I found a place where it had come away from the bottom and it had curled up. And he and I passed through two platoons through that one hole, Paddy out to the left and me out to the right. And I remember Paddy coming, saying to me, say, are we okay now? Okay. Give me a minute to get back. He went back to his platoon. Gave him the minute, we all started going forward. It was quiet. And as we were going forward, a German came from down one of the huts. And he had a black, shiny helm, German helmet on, only a little fellow. And his rifle was slung. And by God, one of my corporals, Corporal Kelly, killed him. And I was furious. It wasn't so much that. It was, they knew we were there then. This was the point. They knew we were there. They didn't know. We were on top of them. And I talked to Kelly about it afterwards. Oh, he said he was getting his rifle off, too, but he wasn't. He was humming. I heard him, the sentry, humming a tune. Anyway, off we went. I started off forward, and my Eric Bell, my 38 set operator, was with me. And we started. Well, after this rifle shot, Kelly shot this chap. And then the Germans opened up, did an Oerlikon, some sort of gun like that, down to the right. And as we were going along, it was hitting the concrete on these on these buildings. And we were going along. Patsy Cunning, my sergeant, was behind, just to make sure everybody kept up. And Bell and I, we kept crawling forward. And suddenly we saw a group of Germans ahead. They came coming towards us, and then they disappeared into a sort of bunker place. And I thought, God, I'll get those. So we lay on the ground, and I pulled the grenade, and I lobbed the grenade down into this dugout place. Nothing. Didn't go off. I looked, and we were trained, if you pull a grenade, you keep the ring always on the pin, so that if you didn't use it, you could put it back. And it was cheap, shoddy material. Instead of pulling the pin out, the ring had straightened, and I was left with a bent ring on my hand. Anyway, nothing seemed to be happening, so Bell and I crawled forward, and we stood at the top of this. There were steps going down. We heard the clang of a door at the bottom. And Bell and I stood at the top of these steps going down and shouted, Rouse, 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 out, out, out. And I heard the door open at the bottom. And the German came. And he started to walk up the steps to us. And suddenly he whipped up a machine pistol and fired. And he killed Bell, who was alongside me. And instinctively, I had a Sten, and I had it on single shot. And I fired three single shots, I killed him. And
was he pretending to surrender?
I don't know what he was doing. We'd rouse, 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 and we thought they were all coming out then. I heard the door clang, this chap came up, and bang! Bell dropped. If it had been an inch, it would have hit his 38 set. It just... He'd been 21 the day before, he was one of the finest, Eric Bell. One of the absolutely terrific chap he was. Terrific. And his brother was a naval officer and his father was a reporter in Newcastle. And I wrote to the father and I got a letter back from the father saying that my letter arrived at the same time as the telegram. And he thanked me for writing. 8 Pearly Gardens, I think it was Newcastle-on-Tyne, the night of the 11th, 12th of September. Stick him in mind forever, I think. And he sent me a picture of Eric, a snapshot, which I have yet. And after that, he sent us 100 cigarettes for the platoon every month. I never met him, I never saw him. But Bell was an amazing lad, really pleasant. Anyway, and then the hard battle went on. The following morning, Bill Ray Smith came up, who was intelligence officer. He spoke rather fluent German. And he stood at the top of the bunker with me and rouse, rouse, shout, 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 shout. And we got 19 more out of there, including a German sergeant major, Phil Babel. And I remember they finding up the stop and past Bell's body. And I said to the sergeant major, "Look what your chap did." And he just looked at me and he pointed at the German body and said, "You know." And the German had a marvellous pair of binoculars. I took them from him. And I eventually gave them to my brother-in-law in San Francisco. But later on that day, we got there were 3 German officers came down to surrender. Crowds and crowds of Germans had surrendered in this time, coming down like nobody's business. At one stage, I couldn't contact company headquarters. So I left Sergeant Cunning in charge and went back to find... When I got back to headquarters, everybody was there walking around ranks of Germans shouting, "Franks, Franks," and Germans were empty. They'd robbed the bank before they went in. Robbed the bank in Le Havre. The average in Bipartite was about £80 a man. And down in that bunker, we got an amazing cinematograph thing and German training films. It was I captured it, it belonged to me. And I gave them eventually to the Territorial Army in Blackwatch in Kirkcaldy. And down in that bunker also, we got 25 bottles of Benedictine. And a radio. But the whole place was, we found rooms hung with sides of beef, meat galore, uniforms, a complete band, complete instruments, band and everything. And 3 German officers came down there, and the 3 batmen with them carrying cases. And one said to me, he was a captain, and I think he thought he was the only man left. He said he was in command of the garrison, but he wasn't high enough rank for that. Anyway, I took his pistol from him. Little Beretta it was, little beauty. And I took the holster as well. And I said, "What are all these batmen with?" One tall chap there with glasses on said, "Well, I've been fighting on the Eastern Front. I've been badly wounded and I need the comfort." So I sent them back. I don't think the CEO was pleased to see them with the batman. But anyway, that apart, after that, we were more or less free. We stood down and I organised in the platoon. We organised a magnificent party with this Benedictine and all this food. It was incredible. And we had a sergeant from another platoon who could play a piano accordion, and I had a piano accordion and all these instruments. And he played for us, and we were all eating in this place. And who should come in but the CO and General Rennie? God, I thought, what's going to happen here? And McCrogan, it was, said, had a 1 or 2 by that time. I said, "Would you like a drink, sir?" General Rennie, and he said, "Yes." And they poured him about half a cup of Benedictine. and he downed it like a man. What he'd come for were jackboots. He wanted a pair of jackboots. And we got them and went. Anyway, I got a message back later that he was pleased to see that the platoon commander had the initiative to arrange something for his men. I thought I was going to get terrible trouble because I had no sentries posted or anything. The battle was over. But that was it anyway. Then we went on from there to a rest area for a while. And a few parades, gingers up, brigadier inspected us. And then we were sent to contain the Germans in Dunkirk. And
did you see anything of the RAF bombing of Le
Havre? Oh, Le Havre. So fantastic. Accurate pointers, I like it in my life. It was terrific. Frightening to see it. It was frightening to see it. And I'd seen some in Malta. But Dunkirk was interesting too. Because we were around this Dunkirk area to contain the Germans in there. And we could see them from a tower. We could see them walking around. But before that, I was in reserve then. D Company in reserve. B Company was actually in La Palme. That was it. And everything was nice and quiet. And John Blinko, he was commanding the platoon that was in La Palme. He was so quiet, he'd asked the padre up for a meal. And he and the padre were just sitting down to this meal in this house in the pan. The Germans came in the front door. They'd done a quick raid, you see. So Blinko was chased back on the padre. They came back and the CO thought, oh, God, they're going to attack headquarters. So I was ordered to retake the position. I brought from my reserve position. So I did. There's not much we could do. The fires burning, they'd started fires burning. It was morning before we got up there. And there was nothing. They'd gone in the morning. Germans had gone. So then I was in La Palme for 4 or 5 days, taking up position that B Company had and making sure there were no more raids. But whilst I was there, a truce was arranged so that French civilians could be evacuated. And Mike Wingate Gray, was brigade intelligence officer, a fluent German speaker, Russian as well, I believe, too. And Mike Wingate Gray, with the white flags, went through my platoon to make contact with the German. I remember being saying, for God's sake, don't shoot me when I'm coming back. There were a few of them. Mike Wingate Gray eventually became brigadier. He died about 2 years ago. He joined the SAS, and I met him in Holland about 3 years ago. And nice chap he was. Anyway, they evacuated the civilians, and we were there for a while. I try to think where we went after that. Probably into Holland. I think we were in Holland. But I remember the battle for Lisieux as well. That was an interesting one.
Where's that?
Lisieux. In France.
Lisieux. In Normandy?
I'm digressing a bit. But I remember this one particularly because we were advancing and getting stonked and stonked and stonked with mortars. I was on this road and the only shelter we could get was lying in the field. And there was a dead horse and I was lying in between the legs of the dead horse to get shelter. And Bell, the radio operator, was lying at my feet. I was there and Bell was lying at my feet. Bell got a message and passed it to me. And the message said, please state the chocolate ration requirement in your platoon. Oh, God, straight in the middle of a battle here and somebody pestering me about chocolate ration. And it suddenly dawned on me. Before the battle on the old groups, chocolate ration was meant ammunition supplies. So I was going to send the right message back, but I remembered it in time. But the Lisieux sticks in my mind because of that. Anyway, shelling eased off eventually, and we got into some nice little place, and we had a hot bath there, a field thing. came up after the battle, and we all had hot showers, marvellous it was. And then some French civilians asked two of us, and they gave us a meal in a private house. It was nothing elaborate. They made a lovely menu. And I can remember one of them lived in Place des Immigrants, but I can't remember much more about that.
Is this at Lisieux?
Lisieux. Probably before before what I've told you. It's just out of sequence somewhat. Then we went into Holland, I think, from there. We had several battles in Holland. The most interesting one from my point of view is St. Michael's Gestel.
St. Michael's what?
St. Michael's Gestel in Holland. And we were advancing up this road. I was on the road was on a higher, and I was advancing on the left. And George McLean, another platoon commander, was advancing on the right. And we were advancing towards this village of St. Michael's Gestel. And there was a tower in St. Michael's Gestel. And the Germans could see us from this tower. And they were opening fire on us. And poor George got badly wounded there. He got badly wounded in the chest. And I was on the other side of the embankment, so I had a little bit of protection. Although we got mortared very badly. But eventually we got up to to St. Michael's Gestel. But I remember George badly wounded, and when George was picked up, he was McLean's pools, they'd football pools, I think, in Glasgow. And he said, never mind, I'll be back in time for the November handicap. That was George, I never saw him again. He was killed in a car accident after the war. Anyway, we eventually got up to Michael's Gestel, and I was, my orders were to take the bridge. And we were in about 40, 50 yards of the bridge, and it blew up just before we got there. Slates fell off roofs, and God, another few minutes would have been on it. Anyhow, Alan Lowe came up, company commander, and CO said, you've got to go across the river. The river was flowing fairly fast. Anyway, there's some Dutch young people brought a boat down, and we passed. The platoon got into the boat, and they had a wire across the river, a telephone cable, and they pulled the boat across the river once we were in. Halfway across, the cable broke. But these Dutchmen just dived straight into the water, got the other end of the cable, joined it up again, and pulled us across still before we hit the broken bridge. And we crossed over the other side, and I was ordered then to go right flank to stop any infiltrating Germans coming down. It was bitterly cold. We got mortared quite a bit up there, but we'd taken sandbags with us to build protection, but we used them to cover our... Oh, God, it was cold. Side of a river in October. And the following day, we were to attack the town of Vught in Holland. V-U-G-H-T, Vught. And we did. We got into Vught in Holland. And I got there. I can remember shooting at a German half-track.